Welcome to today's J&EB Journal Club webinar. This is the ninth in our series, so second to the last Journal Club for the spring semester. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Associate Executive Director of S&EB, and glad you're joining us for the presentation today. Just a little bit of housekeeping to get us started. We are recording today's webinar, so watch for an email from me probably Wednesday of this week, with a link to the recording, the slides, as well as the CEU certificate that you're earning. And as far as the slides, our presenter has graciously made a handout available to you. So if you look in the GoToWebinar panel, there's a place for a handout, and you can go ahead and download that presentation and follow along. We will take questions at the end of the webinar, so please type those in the question box, and we will moderate those to our presenter. And when I close out the session today, there'll be a short survey. We appreciate your feedback on this session, as well as are really interested in your ideas for future Journal Club series, since we're starting to look at what we might be discussing in the fall. So our moderator today is Ginger Quick. She's at Rutgers University in the Department of Nutritional Sciences.
Great. We're glad to have everyone on the call today. We're very excited to have Dr. Barbara Lucy. She's a professor of health sciences and head of the Wegman School of Health and Nutrition in the College of Health Sciences and Technology at the Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York. She's also director of Nutrition Education Engineering and Design Center at RIT. Barbara is a member of the board of directors for the Society of Nutrition Education and Behavior, and was formerly a member of the S&EB Journal Committee and the J&EB Associate Editor. So it's a pleasure to have her today presenting her research on about eating an online program with evidence of increased food resource management skills.
Thank you, Ginger. Thank you, Rachel. Yeah, I see there's two about eatings in there. That's kind of interesting. I would like to just note that I am at RIT now. I used to be at Penn State, and the work that I am presenting today was funded by SNAP-Ed, the Pennsylvania SNAP-Ed. The Wegman School of Health and Nutrition is a new school located at RIT that's focused on doing nutrition education research and providing outreach to the community, and working with the NEED Center, which is the resource program for nutrition educators. And today I'm going to talk about the About Eating program. And this was published in a recent issue of JNEB. And I'm hoping to see a lot of you at SNEB this summer in San Diego and talk with you a little bit more about the program. If you have questions that you don't get answered today, and you think of a little bit later, please feel free to email me at the email address on the title slide. I'll be happy to converse with you or answer some very specific questions. So first of all, the objectives that I'm going to try to get through are to actually look at the multi-stage formative activities that are associated with producing an online program, look at the criteria that are used to select an appropriate online program evaluation, look at the dynamics of comparison group selection in impact assessment. Then another objective is for you to reflect on how applicable the evidence-based nutrition education is to your current and to your planned practice. And I have a couple of words that I hope to have time to talk about that. So first of all, I'd just like to talk a little bit about the theory base and about eating. First of all, we looked at principles of adult learning when we were developing about eating. And it is targeted mostly to adults, although it has been used in some high school classes, upper grade levels. A lot of you are familiar with the principles of adult learning. It's self-directed, self-learning, includes life experiences, and really is focused on people being ready to change. There's also intrinsic motivation to do the learning, and many times it's problem-centered, and people want to be able to apply what they're learning immediately. The educators can help adults learn by explaining the reasons for what's being taught, focus on tasks rather than memorizing content, and addressing real-life problems. And I'm hoping that we'll go through a little bit of about eating, and you can see how that has been applied. Also, we looked at the tenets of the Satter model of eating competence. And if you're not quite familiar with this, eating competence is an intra-individual approach to food selection and eating behavior. It's focused on enjoyment, attention to internal regulation, food acceptance, and food resource management skills. And the food resource management skills component is what I'm focusing on in this particular presentation, although we did include all of the components of eating competence in the program. When you educate using the EC Satter model, there are a few things that are very important, and these are what we've included in the About Eating program. Basically, not criticizing people for where they are or not telling them that this is what they should be doing. We bless eating of any kind. We emphasize providing, not depriving, and trust that people will grow and will learn from the information that is presented. Identify and discard restrained eating concepts, stressing family meals, and joining learners where they are, and of course, teaching meal planning, things that nutrition educators have been doing for quite a while. And finally, we also included some components of the best practices for nutrition education of low-income adults in the program design. I don't know if you have looked at this document, but if not, I would encourage you to go to the best practices website for FNS, because there is a document there that talks about what is needed in program design, program delivery, educator characteristics and training and evaluation. And we did include these concepts, and the article does talk on how we actually included these concepts. So now I'm going to talk about the development of About Eating. And one of the things that you'll notice here is that there's a whole lot of boxes there, right? And I would say that's a key thing of looking at program development and online program development, because not only are you focused on literacy issues and content issues and theory-based, but you're focused on navigation and on reaching the right target audience. And so initially there was a program called Web Health that was AFRI-funded, or actually I think it was an NRI-funded program. Jeff Green from Rhode Island was the PI, and there were a lot of SNEB members who were actually affiliated with this program. And we had 10 non-dieting lessons that were basically focused for college students. And after that program was completed, in which we were able to show some positive benefit from using these 10 lessons, I was, of course, working with SNAP Ed, and I was really concerned about is this program really going to be good for low-income audiences? So we had an expert review, Web Health, for evidence of eating construct competence. And then we did some cognitive interviews, face-to-face interviews with low-income women about four of the Web Health lessons that had focused on eating competence. These cognitive interviews were where we would actually sit next to the women and have them navigate through the program and use this think-aloud process and talk about what was hitting their eye, hitting their mind as they were looking through the pages. And so, of course, this took a lot of training of the interviewers, but we also wanted to be able to look at the navigation aspects. And so we really needed to have people watch them as they navigated it. And so once we then made some revisions in the lessons, based upon working with low-income women rather than college students, we did a preliminary online testing with these low-income women to see, without us being there, now that we revised them, how did they feel, what did they think about the lessons. Then we went on and did a further study, pilot study. So first we were doing preliminary, then we went to pilot study of the lessons because we learned some things from the preliminary testing. And so we went to the pilot testing mode. One of the things that came out of the pilot testing mode was that we really needed to add something in on about being active and physical activity. And the web health did have a couple of physical activity lessons. And so we did some interviews with the physical activity lessons and merged them into a lesson called About Being Active. And it was this five-lesson program then that was subjected to a randomized controlled study with low-income women. And this was one that was one of the first federal demonstration projects that was funded by FNS. Now, after we did the controlled trial, we also looked at the fact that there probably needed to be something more in here about weight perception and body weight and body image. And indeed, there were some lessons in web health that had focused on body image. And we did cognitive interviews with low-income women to see what they thought about these lessons. And we decided to merge them into one lesson called About My Size. And that then is what is the current program for About Eating. You see that there are six icons there for the six different lessons. But I think the key component here is that there are a lot of steps, and you learn from every single one of the steps. And it's actually, to me, kind of fun to realize how things are approached by different audiences, and how pictures need to be changed, and how just navigation needs to be changed. And so it is not something to undertake lightly and think that you're going to be done, you know, just like that. About Eating is a unique program in that the six modules can be completed in any order. That's part of, again, the adult learning theory component, that people should be able to go to the parts that they're interested in. Also, within each module, the learners can kind of navigate it. There are some paths that they can take, and they can actually revise their decisions before they get to the end of the module and go back through and, say, retake a survey, for example. There's also little pressure to engage in any of the module components. If they don't want to look at something, they don't have to. There's not, the things are carefully worded so that people do not feel like they're missing out, or they're being lazy, or they're being, you know, uncaring about their own health if they don't do the whole program. None of this pressure. We don't realize it either, but sometimes we do put pressure on our learners by saying, you know, only five left, only five pages left. I mean, those sorts of things can be pressuresome without us even realizing, and return to the lessons as many times as they want. And indeed, sometimes that's really important for somebody to go back and, oh, I saw a recipe there, or, oh, I saw this little quiz. I want to go back and relook at it. So this is the website that you can get to access About Eating. And so I want to go to the website now. See if this can come up. Yes, I hope it does. Here we go. And so this, the website just tells you, this is the NEAT Center website, by the way. And this is listed as one of the resources under About Eating. There are other resources that we have here, and this About Eating is the first one in the list. So if you've never been to the NEAT Center website, I encourage you to go to it, because we have a lot of resources available for educators, as well as research information. So just going to About Eating will bring you to this particular website and tells you a little bit about it. And then what we have is a site where you can actually preview the modules. And this means that you don't go through any of the data websites. And so it doesn't mess up any of the data, but you can just go through and preview them and get a feeling if you'd like to actually look at them. So then by previewing them, you come to this particular website. So I first of all want to go to the website. How about My Size? And a couple of things I just want to show you about these is there's usually a little bit of information about what we're trying to focus on, what some of our objectives are, and you notice that each page is kind of clean. There's not a lot of things on the front, on the back, on the sides. We try to make it as easy to navigate as possible. And then describing what's actually going to happen. And so in this case, we have a myth or fact. And so people can, you know, click on one of these, and up will come whether it's, like in this case, if I clicked myth, I say right, But if I had said it was a fact, I would just say try again, but I get the exact same response, so that there's no, it isn't like, oh, you're wrong, try again. Again, it's really sensitive in terms of helping people feel comfortable with being able to move forward and go through the lesson. And so here I'm just going to go through these particular myths or facts. Then we get into some testimonials, and we've tried to include men and women. And I would like to point out that we have tested this specifically with men, too, and did cognitive interviews with 25 males. And we do describe that in an article that's in the Journal of Community Health. If you're interested in that, let me know. It is does come up when you search for my name in PubMed. But the males, we made a few changes in the program so that it was applicable to males also, because there weren't that many changes, but there were a few little things that made them more interested in it. So, again, we're looking at some testimonials for people. And here we have, like, check blanks here. You can check some of these things. And if you want to, are you size accepting? And if you checked three or more, then you may have a negative body image. So you see right away, you get your feedback right away. And then here is the Larry Kirkwood's Body Image Project. You can click here and watch a video. We are adding a few more video items to the program. We are revising this a little bit now to add some whiteboarding and to add a few more videos. But I wanted to show you, too, that we have things where you can print the list. So, like, maybe this list, maybe somebody wants to use it in a class, or you want to use it as a handout, or a person wants to actually use it themselves. You can print the list and be able to have it as a handout. So let's see. So I want to now go back to the beginning here and go to look at one more lesson. If we look at the about being active lesson, for example, you have a choice here if you want to begin the survey about physical activity. You're not interested in the survey, but you want to learn more, or you just decide, I'm not really that interested in this. So, like, if you said here, I'm not interested in the survey, but I want to learn more, you're going to go through lots of different screens that will provide you with information and that you can read. And I'm just scrolling through these really quickly now in order to get to a certain point. So in this case, I'm choosing that. Maybe I'm like Combo Chris, and then it's going to tell me a little bit more. But I can also, what are my reasons for wanting to be more active? So maybe I want to be healthier. So this is going to give me a little bit more information, and I can then go to another website where I can learn more. I can also print my factors if I want to remember them or use them in some other activity. Dealing with obstacles, again, it pops up right away in terms of, like, if you have poor weather, what are some things that you can do? Again, somebody can print this to have this type of information available. Now, maybe I decided that I had skipped the quiz, but now I'm at a point where I really do want to see this quiz, and I really do want to know more. So maybe I can click here, I skipped the survey, but I really want to take it now. And so then it'll actually take me back and let me do the quiz. And so that's kind of I just wanted to give you a couple of examples of how we're trying to incorporate adult learning and best practices into the program. So now going on, the evaluation of the program, we do have pre and post surveys, and we also, the surveys include the EARS items, and they include a post-module evaluation. We can have unique surveys available, and this is where you email, there's a sign on the NEATS website where if you're interested in using this program, you can email me and so that we can hook you up to get the standard pre and post survey. Or if you want to use some unique surveys, we can talk about how we can do that. Sometimes organizations have particular questions that they want to ask and learn about pre and post. And you can track by email address and unique code, site code, so that we can actually monitor people's progress through the whole online lesson in terms of what they're printing out, what they're downloading, what lessons they go to first. Like, here's an example of the standard module lesson where we ask them to report on the navigation and the actual program. The questions the items that people might feel less comfortable responding to and admitting that they are having difficulty, we've worded in a way that it's easy to agree with this. So the lesson was difficult to read. It's easier to agree than it is to disagree. And so getting around the website was difficult. People may not want to admit to that, but we really want to know that. So those are worded in a way that they can agree with the negative statement. The other statements are more positive because that's easier for them to agree with those. And here are some of the EARS questions. Again, just a sample of the questions and the type of what it looks like when you're doing the surveys. The other thing in terms of the evaluation, we feel that we're always in what's called constant beta or an agile response mode, which means that we are constantly making little changes here and there based upon feedback that we get from our users, our educators, and usually there are very little tweaks. Right now we're in the process of, like I said, adding some whiteboarding and some videos so that an organization can use this for their worksite wellness program. But when we do these, we for example, in About Being Active and About My Size, we did cognitive interviews, and we did it with very smaller samples, like sizes of 12 or 24. We looked at geodiversity, so we made sure we were covering a variety of urban, rural sites or different counties in a particular state. We also look at the lesson order so that when we're doing interviews, we don't give everybody the same lesson to look at first, because you get used to giving comments and responses. We also train our interviewers very carefully and have them develop a rapport, because they're sitting with people and we need to have them feel very comfortable telling us what they're thinking. And then when we actually make revisions, we reevaluate the revisions. We usually try to use some of the same people who gave us the initial responses to say, hey, did we get it right? But I think it's always important to evaluate the revisions. And sometimes that stage gets left out because we think we've gotten it right, or there hasn't been funding or time that has been budgeted for in terms of evaluation. Okay. Version, which was the six lessons with the exception of About My Size. And then we have evaluated that with a randomized controlled trial, which I'm going to go through in just a few minutes here. But we also then have been evaluating and using our six lesson version. Right now we're using it in a program, an athlete-funded program, Fuel for Fun, Leslie Cunningham Sable at Colorado State. And this is we're using this as our parent education component, and we've done quite a bit of pre-testing prior to using it with our parents of fourth-grade children. I think we've had about 400 parents actually go through the program. So right now I'm going to be talking mostly about this five-lesson version, okay, and the impact assessment with the five-lesson version. This, like I said, was part of the federal demonstration grant. And so who did we actually have include in this five-lesson impact assessment was females, 18 to 45. Their county could not be in SNAP-Ed because we didn't want there to be any bias where they were learning something in a SNAP-Ed program that we would then attribute to the About Eating program. They had to be in good general health. And read and write English, not in a four-year college, not studying or employed as a nutritionist, and they had to have an email address and internet access. And again, this was because this was our typical SNAP-Ed audience, and that's who we wanted to be able to evaluate it against. I just wanted to show you that we kept track of all kinds of costs of recruiting participants to this study. And that's an important part of evaluation, is how are you recruiting and how much is it going to cost? In this case, we recruited with flyers and postcards, and we went to low-income venues. We went to, at that time, it was called the Department of Public Welfare, now it's called the Department of Human Services. They gave us a list of people who are participating in SNAP, And so we were able to come up with the costs where overall, when you combine the two procedures, the cost per participant who completed the study was $13.66 in recruitment costs. And that did not include personnel costs. When you add them in there, the costs are well over $40 to $50 per participant completed. And so that's really something to think about when you're evaluating programs. I do want to put a little plug in here in that I wanted to recruit using Facebook. And there was a little concern at the time that we did the study that Facebook might not be the best way to recruit. And so when the study was done, I took some other funds and just recruited people to the study. They didn't actually go through. I didn't measure their completion of the program, but I took them through to the pre-survey, and which is what the other data were for, and to see how much would it actually cost. And in this case, the costs were $11.48 per interested eligible participant and $15.30 per low-income interested eligible participant, and this included personnel costs. So you can see it was like a third the cost to use Facebook to recruit. And this is an article that's published in JNEB in 2013. And so that's another thing that you can do with this evaluating online programs is, you know, you can evaluate a lot of different things, not even just the program, but the recruitment, the cost, how things look, a lot of different things related to nutrition education and nutrition education research. I just want to show you that we had pre-survey questions that were related to their SNAP use, their worry about money for food, their food security, demographics, how they learned about the study, and really interesting research in terms of how people learn and how they share information. We had post-survey, post-study evaluations, where we wanted to know what order they did the modules in, what they thought of the modules, what were their comments. And then both pre and post were the things that we were looking at for change. The food preference survey, the three-factor eating questionnaire, the eating competence survey, physical activity surveys, their self-reported height and weight, food that was available in the home, and, of course, the FNAP questions. This is just a little key kind of. I want to just run it through with you to give you an idea of how we did the testing for this impact assessment. People received, after they did the survey, they received a link to a lesson. After 3 days, we emailed them to say, you know, remind them about the lesson. And after, again, on day 8, 5 more days, we emailed them. And then on day 10, we asked to have the lesson completed. They had to have completed it within 10 days. If they didn't, they were on a triter. If they did, we waited 3 days, and then we sent them the link to the second lesson. So there was, it was a very specific way in which the program went. And so this is the actual study where we recruited people. They accessed the study website, and then they did a recruitment survey and a pre-survey. And then after they did the pre-survey, they were randomized by the survey center to go either into the About Eating program or the control group, which was the USDA Click and Go program. The Click and Go program, all we did was send them emails throughout the study to remind them to go, because the Click and Go program had handouts and it had different topics that mirrored what was in About Eating. But it was very much where they could go and just they would download handouts and read them. And then we gave them an adoption period, and then did the post-survey. And here you can see we did lesson 1, we did lesson 2, 3, 4, and 5, an opportunity for adoption, and then we did the post-survey. So we tried to mirror as much as possible the way, you know, in which they received the lessons. There were 154 people that completed the About Eating program. And there were actually 40 different order combinations in terms of the modules that were done. 70% of them started with the first module that was listed, which was food variety. But 13% of them started with the last module, which was about being active. And I say last, I just mean on the far right. only 31% used the order in which the modules were listed on the website, which was something that was quite interesting because it said that we did meet one of our criteria, which is that people would select the modules in the order in which they were interested. Then we did pair t-tests looking at pre and post within each group. And these are some of the questions that from the FNAP behavior checklist. And you can see that for about eating, almost all of them were significant changes. They were less likely to run out of food by the end of the month. They were more apt to use a nutrition facts label, to use a written spending plan or budget, and to feel confident about managing their food, planning meals to include all food groups. And then these last two were not, there were increases, but they weren't significant. And the comparison group had very few significant changes from pre to post. And then when you compared looking at whether or not people were food secure or food insecure using the USDA food security screener, this was another interesting concept in that when we looked at the about eating group and just compared the change from baseline. So this is comparing the change from baseline, for example, in confidence for managing your money for food. The about eating group had a significant difference between those who were considered food secure or food insecure. You can see here that there was actually a decrease in people who are food insecure in having confidence in managing their money for food. The food secure people, quite a good increase, almost, you know, well above a half of a point, which is something on a 5-point scale. Whereas in the click and go group, there was no significant difference between being food secure or insecure. And here in using a written budget or a spending plan, there was a trend for the food secure people to be more apt to use a written budget or spending plan, whereas the about eating group or the food insecure group in the about eating, there was really no change. No significant difference between the food secure and food insecure persons in the click and go group. And here, keeping track of food-related purchases, there's actually a decrease in the food insecure group compared to the food secure group, and no significant change in the click and go. And so what this told us, too, was that we really needed to be careful that we couldn't just automatically compare about eating to the click and go, that there were other factors that were important, and food security was an important one. With a food secure audience, it appears as though they are going to adopt more of the ideas and a little bit more open to some of the things that you're talking about. And we think that perhaps in the food insecure group, some of the ideas that we had in here maybe were more frightening, or it appeared to be too much, or just because of the food insecurity itself, there were so many other factors, such cognitive load to consider, that the message that we were trying to relay did not actually get met. In fact, they weren't able to then apply it and be able to say at the end of the lesson that this is something that they could do. And so this is why we're also happy that the program is set up in such a way now that people can go back into the program and study it as many times as they want and get more familiar with things and perhaps just need a few more times to go through if there are issues of food insecurity. So some evaluation considerations, and that is looking at your objectives. The demonstration project people at FNS felt that the About Eating program wasn't really very successful, and that's because they were looking at fruit and vegetable intake. And About Eating was never really set up to purposely increase fruit and vegetable intake. It's hoped that with time and with getting better food preparation skills and learning a little bit more about variety of food, that this would enhance. But that was not ever a consideration that after going through these five lessons, you would suddenly now have a higher fruit and vegetable intake. And so there wasn't a higher fruit and vegetable intake. so isn't considered to be successful. So it's really important to consider the evaluation objectives. Another thing is to consider the recruitment issues. It took a significant amount of time to recruit using our posters, postcards, and flyers. It actually took 5 months, whereas when we did the recruitment by Facebook, we got the same amount of people to be recruited to About Eating in 19 days. And so that is really something to consider when you're doing your evaluation. Also, being contextual, evaluate something just as you're going to use it. For example, evaluate the navigation, and like in our cognitive interviews, consider sitting next to people as they navigate, or consider doing some sort of Google Hangout or Skype or video screening with them where maybe you can look at their screen as they're navigating and even be able to make some decisions about their navigation where they're not even looking at you. They're looking at the screen, and you're not even a person that they see, but you can see how they navigate on the screen. So that's another thought to consider in terms of evaluating an online program. And then I would say pick your control and comparison group very, very carefully. We feel that perhaps our click and go program was too close to About Eating. It had such similar topics, and it had handouts, and they were very well done. I mean, it was an FNS program, and the handouts were easy to read. They were bright and colorful. They were interesting and entertaining. And they were online, but people could go to them frequently as many times as they wanted to. And the way we had our study set up, people were not allowed to go back into each lesson for About Eating. They had to do a lesson and then go to the next lesson, and they could not go back to the first lesson. And so, but they had the capacity to do that in the click and go control group, because we weren't able to control that particular website. And so we feel that's another reason that the About Eating program may not have shown as much success against the comparison group. And that's a reason why we feel that the fact that the food resource management skills were able to be increased and were increased in comparison to the click and go group is really pretty significant. Because we had some big restraints on the About Eating group. They could not go back into a lesson. They could not revisit a site. And so we were very surprised, happily surprised, that the food resource management skills themselves did improve with the About Eating group in the randomized controlled trial. And so you learn from the evaluation. So one of the things we did learn from this evaluation was that we really needed to focus on some body weight issue, and we heard that from people. They were like, why don't you have anything in here about weight? And that's where we decided then to add the About My Size program after doing a lot of cognitive interviews, more than 36 cognitive interviews. And it's interesting because that has any evidence-based nutrition programs on them for military families. We did apply to have About Eating be on that site, and it is on the site, but it's not at a high level of evaluation of evidence-base that you would expect with a controlled randomized trial. And that's because the program now has these 6 lessons rather than the 5 that were used in the evaluation. And so here's just my little opinion, is that I think evidence-based is fabulous. It's something that I've promoted all along. But I think it's kind of interesting when you have an online randomized controlled trial that's showing some positive impact from using a 5-lesson program, and then you actually revise the program. By revise, I mean add to it based upon the comments of the people who did the randomized control trial, that to not then include that as a higher level of evidence simply because we've added a 6th lesson I think we need to revisit what we're looking for with evidence-based for nutrition education, because here is a truly randomized controlled trial that has had a lesson added as a result of participant responses that is not being counted as having a higher level of evidence because of some of the rules and regulations. And to go back and do an online controlled trial with 6 lessons rather than the 5, well, we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that that we're just not able to have give to us just because of adding one lesson. So I'm hoping that we can, as nutrition educators, reflect on this concept of how we're using evidence-based materials, and especially since we're supposed to revise, and in fact it's good to revise based upon doing trials, how are we then supposed to integrate the revised materials into our evidence-based libraries? So I just put that out there as a little bit of a food for thought. So I hope that you've enjoyed the discussion about eating. Maybe that's why I have about eating on there twice, because I'm always saying about eating. And know that this has been something that has been used in quite a number of places. And sometimes people use the whole series. Sometimes people decide to just use one of the lessons going according to what their needs are. And I just really encourage you to take a look at the program and also send us comments as you're going through the program and previewing it. And if you want to have a pre and post surveys that we've used, just let me know so we can hook you up. If you want to have some unique surveys, also let me know so that we can work with you to make that happen. We use Survey Gizmo as the program for the downloading and using the surveys. So I guess I'm open for questions if you have some.
Great. Thank you, Barbara, for presenting. And I know we'll probably have a number of questions from listeners. One question that we have, they were wondering, because you had said that participants were obligated to complete all the modules, what happens if they didn't complete all those modules? Did you still include both their pre and post tests in your analyses?
No, if they, in order to get to the post test, they had to have completed all 5 of the lessons. If they only did a couple, we included their pre-study so that we could know more about who was it who actually dropped out. And we also looked at their end of the module surveys, because at the end of each questions about navigation, usefulness, interest, to see if if there was any difference in people's responses to the particular modules.
Okay, great. Were there any differences between those that did and didn't complete the modules?
Yes, there were, and I think I talked about them in the actual manuscript. In terms of going back of thinking through, sometimes we had it seemed to me that it had to do also with where it was recruited, that the recruitment method and where we recruited from also made some sort of a difference on how well people completed them, because in some cases, if they were completing them at, for example, a job development site or a site where maybe they didn't have access to a computer all the time, they weren't able to go through and always complete them, although we did give them a little bit of leeway so that that's why we had the 10 days, so that they would have time to be able to go back to that particular website. I would have to go back and relook at that particular article, but there was nothing that really stood out as, like, it's always people who are pregnant or people who are overweight or, something like that. Nothing like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would make sense if someone didn't have access to internet as frequently, that could kind of limit them in continuing the study. Now, I feel like nowadays everyone has like a smartphone or cell phone. Is this program, can you actually view it on your cell phone? Is it user friendly?
You can. Yes, you can. It is responsive. You can view it on your cell phone. At the time of this study, it was not. But since then, we have made it responsive, and it has been adapted for use in a tablet format. And there is a place in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that has tablets that when people come into the health center, rather than sitting and looking at a magazine, they can pick up the tablet and actually go through the About Eating program.
Okay, great. Another question. They were wondering, how long does it take participants to go through all the modules? You know, are some modules longer than others, or do most people complete it, you know, in the same amount of time?
You know, it really varies, and that is one thing that we were able to keep track of. Usually a person can go through a module within 15 minutes. And it can be as long as a half hour, you know, depending upon if they want to read everything. There are some website links. There's recipe links and all sorts of things that people can go through it in a longer period of time. But within 15 minutes, and again, we felt that was what was going to be feasible for somebody to sit down and do. Now, one of the problems that we've had, and those of you who have done online education will understand this, one of the problems we've had in really, really knowing about this in the impact assessment study was because we can only monitor when they started it and then when they left it. And so somebody may start it and then go answer the phone. And it's still the time is still running then. And so we don't really know that person who was on for an hour. Was that really because they were looking through the whole thing, or did they just get interested in a TV show and forget to shut it off? But when we've gone through with the cognitive interviews, we know that people can do it well within 15 minutes.
Okay, great. Another thought. So we were just curious as to whether or not this has been translated into other languages for a large, maybe Hispanic population.
Rhonda Ballou at Penn State has had the text translated into Spanish, and we are in the process of trying to have funding that will allow for change in the website itself. So we'd be changing the text into Spanish, and then we would want to go through and have some graphics looked at and some examples looked at to make sure with a Hispanic audience to make sure that it's okay. I've done translating where I've taken educational materials, translated to Spanish, and then had people look at it. And there's not a lot of change, but there is a little bit. And so, you know, my hope would be that this could be a SNAP-Ed funded project, whereby, because SNAP-Ed has funded the whole development of About Eating, and where we could make this be available online in Spanish. But I do know that it has been translated, the text has been translated, and it's in progress. That's the only other language that I'm aware of.
Okay, great, thanks. So one of the questions is, they were curious as what the current status of this project is now. Because it was used in the Pennsylvania SNAP-Ed program. But now that the evaluation is complete, are you continuing to, adapt and modify this in your new position at Wigman School of Health and Nutrition?
Right. Well, first of all, we are using it in, like I said, the Colorado project, where we have the children going through Fuel for Fun, which is an in-school cooking program as well as a family component. And the About Eating is one of the parent components of the whole project. And so we're using the six lessons in the parent component. And we are just finishing up that study. In fact, we've just finished up using having About Eating in that particular project and are getting ready to analyze all of those data. There are some other, I've gotten inquiries from people who, want to have the program, and they get access to it. And then there's a variety of things. It can be that I see the data and send it to you, or it can be set up that people have the data themselves, or they just want to use the preview site. And in that case, I see that the preview site is being used, but I have no idea how it's being evaluated, or if people are actually using their own pre and post surveys, or how they're actually using it, just that it is being used. We are also looking at revising it, like I said, adding in more videos. It has been evaluated by some corporate dietitians for looking at how does this work in a wellness program, in an employee, a worksite wellness program. And we are making some changes based upon those comments. And they're not big changes in content. They're more changes that I would say are like jazzing it up a little bit with the whiteboarding and the videos, a little bit more pizzazz to it.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Is there one thing that you would want to tell anybody who maybe wants to adopt this program, some type of advice you might want to give them?
Well, I would say, first of all, have some idea of who your target audience is that you want to use with this program. Know whether or not do you want to restrict it to females. It is good for males and females, but we have not really officially tested it in high school students, although I have had requests from high school teachers for the preview site, and my guess is that they are using it in a health class because I do see that there's activity at that particular website, but I have no idea, of course, how they're using it. So I would say be sure you have an idea of how you want to use it, and you know, with which target audience, and just contact me, because I think knowing the pre and the post data, as well as the end of the module evaluations, would be really useful for your program, so that you could report those data, as well as for you to know perhaps what other needs your clients might have. We'd love to get ideas of other types of modules that we could add. We have a lot of things that could be done, that could be added as modules, and getting feedback from people on that would be really good.
Okay, great. Now, when you worked on these modules, did you work with somebody in IT to help you kind of generate these on the website?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, the modules, the original content really has to go back to the web health people. And the, Adrian White and Tanya, the whole web health group, Andrew Kettleman, and I'm sure I'm leaving out some people who, really worked hard on these lessons and developed the original content. And then they worked with an IT person, and then when I decided I wanted to see how they worked with a low-income audience and revise things, I worked with IT people at Penn State, and now I have been working with, for the last several years, with a person at the University of Maine, an IT person who not only took the content and put that, into the program, but has helped in terms of using SurveyGizmo and making the surveys easy to complete and easy for me to download and to monitor. And then I get reports on the use of the, is the program being used, et cetera. So, yes, I think you need to have an IT. And to me, that's one of the reasons that SnapEd funded this was it's done in a sense. I mean, you obviously we have constant beta. And if I hear lots of comments from people on, boy, we should change this or we should change that, I'm going to go to the IT person and ask them to change it. But if you're an educator and you want to use this with adults or as part of a project or part of a control, type of, intervention, it's pretty well done. That's one of the reasons we're using it in the Feel for Fun program is it had been tested and it was tested with adults. and we wanted to have parents get education that was about healthful eating and cooking and activity and all of the topics that were really applying to their children on the in-school program.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. That's wonderful. If there aren't any other questions, if there are any other questions after the end of this call, I'm sure Barbara Lewis would be happy to answer them. So feel free to definitely reach out to her for any questions. And then I just want to say thank you again, Barbara Lewis, for coming and speaking to us today on this topic.
Thank you all very
Rachel, much. I'll let Rachel close out.
Great, thank you. Just a reminder, I'll send an email on Wednesday of this week with the recording that we made, the handout, as well as the CEU certificate. And join us in 2 weeks. We have another week off, and then our final session is on the 25th. I'll also say, take a look at the SNEB website because there's some very interesting webinars coming up in the next week. We have a grocery, why we buy what we buy, webinar on the 13th. And then there's actually a JNEB webinar on methods papers on the 26th, and that is free to everyone. And then the following day on the 27th, we have What's in a Name, which is an international look at nutrition education. Now, that has an early start time to accommodate our global audience, but that is also free to everyone. So you're more than happy to share the information about those webinars with your peers and colleagues. So thank you for attending today.